The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Tuesday, August 9th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here. We're glad to have you here on the best live podcast of news and interviews for the cannabis community on the internet. We're so glad to be a part of the Normal Network, and thanks for joining us. Got all sorts of great stuff to get to. Let's start with our introduction. Sitting to my right, driving the ship of state, Ganja John.
What's up, Russ? I do this every show. I forget to press the goddamn button to turn my... Okay, do that again.
What's up, John?
It still didn't work. But... Okay, whatever. I'm having a great day. How are you?
It's that kind of day, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Also joining us here is Wiz Khalifa, hanging out in the end of the table. Oh, yes, the audience loves Wiz Khalifa.
Thank you, and I'll wave over here to the camera. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Khalifa's sitting in a pit today, though.
In the pit. Well, I'm already short enough. Come on now.
Also joining us from our virtual studios in Grastoria, Oregon, is the lovely Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, everyone. Happy Tuesday.
That's right. The hardest working woman in cannabis news. And I want to encourage everyone to check out her fantastic blog, cannabisfantastic.com.
Thank you, Russ.
I'd love to do that for you. Hey, tell us what we got in the news today.
There's no news today.
There's no news at all?
No, I'm just kidding. Wow. I'm sorry. We actually have an update from the San Diego dispensary saga. I actually am starting to enjoy reporting on that. And then we have some international news. We have a new state that recognizes medical marijuana, just not in the U.S. And I think we're going to go to Arizona, because now that they've not focused on state employees getting prosecuted, they're going to set their sights on something else. And I'll tell you all about that as well.
All right. And I'm, at the end of there, I'm going to add some more data that's come into the Normal Show Live studios. A new poll from Angus Reid on legalization and 2009 state data from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. So check that out. And then at 20 after, we've got our Daily Toker Tunes, which is Electric Tuesday today. Now, Cannabis Cure, you probably see him up on the webcam there, is without internet access as he's traveling about. So we're going to pull a tune for him. So we've got some music from Ron Jenkins, some Disorganized Fun. And then at half past, we have to make our way out of the studio. We've got important things to attend to today. So we're going to be playing some archive data from you, Reefer Madness for you from Gil Kerlikowski, our drug czar, and Bill Bennett, a former drug czar. So stay tuned for that. It's Normal Show Live.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Hey, Tokers, this is Radical Russ encouraging you to check out the great music this summer. And one group you should definitely check out are big supporters of normal and marijuana legalization. And that's Slightly Stupid. Get all the details online at SeedlessSummerTour.com. Slightly Stupid. Go, we don't need no cocaine. Revolution. I wanna dance. Shwayze. Wait, buzzing all over me like she fell in love. And Cisco. It's the stoniest show of the summer, coming to Missoula, Boise, Redmond, Washington, Eugene and Jacksonville, Oregon, Lake Tahoe, Berkeley, San Diego, Salt Lake City, Aspen, Denver, Asbury Park, Guilford, New Hampshire, Philadelphia, Boston, New York, Baltimore, Charlotte, Cocoa Beach, Boca Raton, St. Augustine, Atlanta, Raleigh, Columbus, Ohio, Chicago, Mesa, Arizona, and Irvine, California. Don't miss it. For more details, visit SeedlessSummerTour.com. Seedless Summer Tour is sponsored by Seedless.com, Sector 9, Groove Shark, Revolution Vodka, and Silver Surfer Vaporizers.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
In the continuing San Diego medical marijuana dispensary saga, the mayor, Jerry Sanders, has announced the city will not increase any efforts to close the existing medical marijuana dispensaries. Last month, we told you the city council had rescinded restrictions on dispensaries instead of paying as much as $1 million for a public vote. City council members had passed dispensary regulations back in April, but then a coalition of dispensary owners and medical marijuana advocates collected enough signatures to place a repeal of the rules on the ballot because they felt the new rules were too restrictive. At the time, there were about 165 medical marijuana collectives, all of which were technically operating illegally under the current zoning laws of the city. Now the dispensaries are back to square one, which means they are all operating illegally according to zoning laws. But mayoral spokeswoman Rachel Lang said that it will remain up to code compliance officers to investigate any complaints against the collectives and work out the problems with them. She said that that will be the approach, the issue on a complaint basis, one at a time, and suspects that that will be the case of San Diego dealing with the existing dispensaries for the time being. Mayor Sanders said that he will not engage in the contentious and potentially expensive process of regulating the dispensaries for now. City planners were not part of the process of drafting the regulations back in April, and those regulations were set to take effect without the mayor's signature before they were rescinded. But fiscal issues played a large role in helping the dispensaries remain open, since the idea of holding a special election weighed in heavily on the city with a $40 million deficit in a $1.1 billion operating budget for the next fiscal year. Economics aside, some community leaders and council members have been advocating on an outright ban on the collectives and dispensaries. Scott Chipman, the chairman of the San Diegans for Safe Neighborhoods, an organization that sprang up to fight the proliferation of dispensaries, has said that inaction by the city on illegal businesses sends a powerful message to residents that neither they or city officials need to respect the rule of law where marijuana is concerned. He pointed out that all the other businesses need tax certificates, inspections by government agencies, and he chastised the mayor this week over the announcement that he will not be spending time and money to close any existing dispensary for the time being, saying that the mayor has the power to shut down the illegal dispensaries, but is failing to fulfill his duties. Since April of 2009, code enforcement officers have opened 225 cases against dispensaries in San Diego. They've made 79 referrals to City Attorney Jan Goldsmith. Code compliance has closed 56 cases, 11 of which were referred to Goldsmith, and 26 collectives have closed down as a result of city attorney enforcement. Five are currently tied up in litigation brought within the last year, and an additional 38 are in various stages of investigation, negotiation, or pre-filing status, according to a city spokesperson.
It seems like all these agencies now just want to pass the buck on this. They, you know, they hate him. We don't want to have him around, but we can't really afford to go after him. Why don't you code inspectors go after him? Oh, man. Well, I guess it's progress considering in San Diego, you know, the history that they've had to suffer through there with all the raids and so forth. So I guess being back to square one is better than the alternative.
And now that Arizona has their answer on whether the federal government is planning on prosecuting state employees for administering a voter initiative law, they don't. Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn, who filed the case seeking clarification of federal intentions, was in court again today. This time he is asking the court to shut down cannabis clubs that have opened up in the void of dispensaries. Cannabis clubs are different than dispensaries because most operate under the part of the law that says patients can share their medical cannabis with each other in a private setting. Social clubs encourage medical marijuana patients to come and enjoy their marijuana in a social atmosphere, a rather gray area since many do supply cannabis in exchange for a membership fee or a cover charge. Attorney General Horn said the courts told the courts that the clubs need to shut down because he says they are blatantly illegal under the Arizona medical marijuana laws. He filed a motion in Maricopa County Superior Court and named four clubs and one individual as breaking the law. He wants the judge to rule that the clubs are illegal and is seeking an injunction to stop them from, quote, selling, producing, transporting, transferring, or possessing of marijuana. The filing was not due to the ruling yesterday, but because the director of the State Department of Health Services, Will Humboldt, had asked him to look into the legality of the clubs that began cropping up earlier this summer. The attorney general was asked about the filing today in a pointed question that if he is so sure that the clubs are operating illegally, why doesn't he just have the clubs raided and the staff arrested? Horn told reporters that he wanted to take a softer approach in the situation and was going the route of the courts because he says the law is new and that there may be many different interpretations. He said that getting the courts involved in the case was a more prudent strategy than directing police to arrest club operators. He then added, "I'm trying to be a good guy." He said that the problem is the clubs are charging fees and said that if everything was truly free in the cannabis clubs, he believes that they would be operating legally. But Horn disagrees with club owners and doesn't believe that free medical marijuana is part of the overall benefits of being in a club. Although the lawsuit filed today only targets the four clubs, a ruling against them will send a message to other clubs and would-be clubs in Arizona. He said if the courts rule with him that they will set a reasonable deadline for the clubs to close or to face prosecution.
What a odd situation here. You have a medical marijuana law that authorizes state-run dispensaries, but then you, Tom Horn, and your governor complain that you're worried the state-operated dispensary workers, right, the state workers in the dispensary, might be prosecuted by the feds. So you say no dispensaries can open up. So in the meantime, since no dispensaries are open, cannabis clubs open up, and these cannabis clubs will let people pay a membership fee to come into the club, and then once they're in there, they're a bunch of legal patients, and, you know, what goes on, but really, as far as trying to bust them, it might be kind of difficult to say they can't possess cannabis when maybe they're not, and it's actually just the people in there possessing the cannabis who are legally authorized to do so under this medical marijuana law. So this crops up, and now you got a problem with it. You want to shut it down because it's blatantly illegal, and you're doing this the day after the federal government said, hey, your whole problem with the state workers, don't worry about that. We're not going to bust them. So it would seem to me now that you should be opening up the dispensaries, that you should just go forward with the dispensary operations that are authorized by that Arizona Prop 203 and allow these people a place to get their medicine if you really want to be a good guy.
And some international news. The health minister in Israel has some new responsibilities. On Sunday, the Israeli government approved the dispensing and supervision of medical cannabis for medical and research purposes across the nation. In a statement from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's media advisor, he said that the move was the nation's recognition that the medical use of cannabis is necessary in certain cases. Along with the health ministry, the Israeli police and the Israeli anti-drug authority will oversee some parts of the new program, such as supplies used to cultivate and imports that are also allowed under the new law. The move to legalize medical marijuana came as no surprise since the health ministry made the decision last week to set up a unit permit within the department to grow medical marijuana for patients to use and research purposes. That program will begin January 2012. The health ministry is advocating for the country's medical marijuana supply to only be domestically produced, but the police have lobbied for medical marijuana to be imported in a bid to reduce possible diversion to non-medical uses. Israel has already been recognizing patients' rights to use marijuana, but had yet set up a formal program. The country estimates that there are currently about 6,000 medical marijuana patients, but the program for registering has become so popular that the health ministry estimates that there may be 40,000 medical users of cannabis by 2016. Medical marijuana for the existing patients is now being grown by private Israeli growers and mostly to treat chronic pain and terminal illnesses. But the health ministry has recognized the therapeutic potential of cannabis for many years and will accept applications into the program on a case-by-case basis, not on an exact condition like is the practice here in the States. Now, that will open the doors to patients who suffer post-traumatic stress disorder, from soldiers to sexual assault victims. Israel scientists and the medical community have been very progressive in this area of marijuana therapies. Most of the studies about the benefits of medical cannabis in its use for PTSD have come out of Israel in the last few years. And so far, patients have now that have been recommended for psychiatric treatment for medical cannabis have encountered bureaucratic obstacles for becoming legal. The new program should eliminate that restriction. Many nursing homes have been allowing the use of medical cannabis for seniors, and that program can now flourish in public facilities as well. So a great job to the Israeli government there.
Mm-hmm. I'm compelling my people.
Yeah. Oy. It's wonderful. Yeah. You know, the Canadian government has recognized this, has a medical marijuana program through Health Canada. It's not perfect. It's not even good for that matter, but they at least recognize there's a medical benefit to cannabis. We've got Israel, you know, pushing the envelope here as far as recognizing medical benefit and moving forward with scientific research. We've got other countries throughout this planet now that are finally breaking away from the United States reefer madness prohibition mindset on medical marijuana and moving forward with, imagine that, taking care of their people. All right, got some data to bring to you here. This is from the Angus Reid Global Monitor. This is an online poll that was recently taken, but not like one of those that you get on your local news where anyone can click in and it's like, you know, 97% say this or that. But it's Angus Reid Global Monitor, a randomized poll that says now a majority of Americans are ready to legalize marijuana, as was the case last year. Most respondents believe also the war on drugs has been a failure. And what we get, the big headline here is 55% nationwide, 55% support the legalization of marijuana. Now, the reason why this number may be higher on the Angus Reid poll than, say, on the Gallup poll that showed 46% has to do with the way the polls are conducted. Gallup polls are conducted through telephones, whereas this Angus Reid poll is an online survey. And some people believe that with an online survey, people feel more anonymous and freer to admit that they are breaking state and federal laws by admitting that they think marijuana ought to be legal. Not breaking laws, but you get my point, that they don't have that social stigma of admitting they want to legalize here. So I want to bring up some of the interesting numbers here in this report. First of all, they had a question that asked, which of the following statements comes closest to your view? America has a serious drug abuse problem and it affects the whole country. 64% said yes. And I think there is a problem we need to address, because we do not have a serious drug abuse problem in this country. If you look at the numbers of people that are addicted to hard drugs, it's a very, very small and fairly constant number. What we have is a drug prohibition problem in this country, and then it affects the whole country. Now, as far as the term war on drugs has been used to describe the efforts of the U.S. government to reduce the illegal drug trade, from what you have seen, read, or heard, would you describe the war on drugs as a success or failure? Only 9% were willing to say that the war on drugs was a success. 67%, 2 out of 3, say it's a failure. Drugs, legalization of marijuana, 55% support. And then they show legalization support for other drugs. You know how they say, oh, well, you know, if we legalize marijuana, what's next? We legalize heroin and meth and crack? Well, as we look at the data here, only 10% of the U.S. public thinks we should legalize ecstasy, 9% for powder coke, 8% for heroin, 7% for crystal meth or crack. So that is a lie. Oh, I had one more. I got one. Keep more going, here for you, going. Folks. More medical marijuana means fewer teens are smoking pot. Is that true? Well, take a look at this data. The new 2008-2009 National Survey on Drug Use and Health state-level data has come out, and it makes a comparison on page 264 to the data from 6 years ago, the 2002-2003 numbers. And I'll throw that chart up on the screen for you there. As soon as it loads up, it's fairly big. As you look at this chart on the screen, every one of the states you see that's some shade of blue, teen smoking of pot has gone up. If it's some shade of blue, yeah, don't adjust your monitors. That's right. There's only three states where teen marijuana smoking has gone up: California, Colorado, and Wyoming. Now, I know some people would say, see, they got dispensaries in California and Colorado, and the teen smoking went up. Well, that doesn't really explain why Wyoming, one of the most anti-pot states, has the highest rate of increase, 5% increase, where Colorado was just 3.7, and California a mere 0.25% increase. It also doesn't explain why Montana, which is a state that up until recently had dispensaries, had the greatest decrease of any medical marijuana state, 27% decrease in teen marijuana smoking. For more information on this, check out the blog at stash.normal.org. You can get the entire report, all the statistics, and some pretty cool maps.
Sorry, Russ, it went off early. It was automatic.
I'm experiencing Vujade.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we got some Electric Tuesday music for you, so stick around.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
You want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name, just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization.
Liberate your mind. Liberate your mind. Liberate your mind. That's what you got to do. Liberate your mind.
Hey, is it 420 yet? This is Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine, and you're tuned into Normal's Audio Stash.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do it.
Down the computer.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electric music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and experimental. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's daily Toker Tunes.
We'll be right back.
want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
Is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
All right, everybody, welcome back, and we're going into Reefer Madness today to look at CNN's Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer. This last Friday, his guests were drug czar Gil Kerlikowske and former first drug czar ever, drug czar Bill Bennett. On CNN's Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, this is courtesy of MoxNews.com.
America has a huge drug problem, but the Obama administration now wants to end what's been called the war on drugs and start treating this as a public health matter. I sat down with the current drug czar, Gil Kerlikowske. He's director of the Office of National Drug Policy, and with CNN contributor Bill Bennett. He was the first drug czar back in the George H.W. Bush administration. Does the change in focus suggest the government is open to legalizing marijuana?
No, legalization is an absolute non-starter in the Obama administration. And
all right, before we go much further, let's pause here with our drug czar, Gil Kerlikowske, because I'd like to remind folks that the drug czar is required by law to lie. And we're looking at this right now in the cam here. According to Title VII, the Office of National Drug Control Policy Reauthorization Act of 1998, responsibilities of the director, that's the drug czar, shall ensure that no federal funds appropriated to the Office of National Drug Control Policy shall be expended for any study or contract relating to the legalization for a medical use or any other use of a substance listed in Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act. That would be marijuana, among others. And to take such actions as necessary to oppose any attempt to legalize the use of a substance in any form that is listed in Schedule 1 and has not been approved for medical purposes by the Food and Drug Administration. Take any such actions as necessary to oppose any attempt to legalize marijuana. So remember, that's Gil Kerlikowske's job description. All right, let's go back to the video.
And it just makes no sense. But what we do know, so there are a lot of people frustrated about the war on drugs. They don't see success. They know friends, they know relatives, they know what's happened in their own neighborhoods. We're going to bring some other people into this issue at the same level that we have law enforcement. That's where we're headed.
Because the argument...
Let's talk about why the American people are so frustrated about this war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. I'll put a graph up here on the screen. You can see this is a graph of all American wars. Now, in the first set of bars here, you're seeing the wars in the 18th and 19th century, all combined. Revolutionary War, War of 1812, Mexican-American War, and so on. All the wars in our first two centuries were 17 years and 2 months worth of total time. We move to the 20th and 21st century.
three wars, including Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, and World War I, World War II, the total of all those wars lasted 33 years and 1 month. The war on drugs has been going on now for 40 years, longer than all American wars in the 20th and 21st century combined, with no results.
In favor of legalizing marijuana is sort of this. We legalized alcohol, we regulate it, people deal with it. Why not do the same thing with marijuana? And as a result, open up efforts to deal with much more serious drug-related issues like heroin, for example.
You know, as a police chief for a long time, I never saw officers in Seattle running around spending an inordinate amount of time chasing people for a small amount of marijuana.
This is one thing drug warriors say that just blows my mind. Marijuana is this terribly dangerous drug, we just absolutely can't legalize it, but we really don't spend a lot of time going after people who are breaking that law. It's either illegal and dangerous, or it's not illegal and dangerous, right? Pick here, pick and choose. And when he says that the cops in Seattle weren't running around doing that, well, part of that is because the voters of Seattle approved an initiative that made the enforcement of marijuana laws the lowest police priority. I'll tell you what, Seattle ain't Columbia, Missouri, that's for sure, where a man just had his dog shot and killed in front of his seven-year-old. We showed that video all week. Let me give you some graphs, too, as well, to kind of illustrate exactly who's getting arrested here. First of all, when we look at arrests for all drugs, marijuana, the green part of this pie graph, make up almost half, 49% of all arrests in the war on drugs are arrests for marijuana. 44% of all arrests in the war on drugs are for marijuana possession, not dealing, not growing, mere possession of marijuana. And the drug czar wants you to believe that they really don't spend a lot of time going around and arresting people for marijuana? Well, who are these half of all the people arrested for drugs being arrested for marijuana? Another chart is the chart of how many total arrests we've had for marijuana. This is from 1990 all the way to 2008. Unless you think this is a Republican or a Democrat issue, Clinton and George W. Bush, both eight-year presidents, locked up about the same number or arrested about the same number of marijuana consumers, with a total of 847,000 arrests for marijuana last year from the Obama administration.
We know that the health costs of alcohol, the health costs of nicotine versus the taxes collected doesn't even begin to pay for those social and criminal justice costs.
Oh, yeah. And you know why? Because marijuana ain't alcohol and tobacco. Alcohol is toxic. It can kill you and it's addictive. Tobacco is toxic. It can kill you and it's addictive. But let's just take a look at some more data on this, because Canada took a look at this. Canada took a look and asked, what does it cost per user per year of three selected substances? Here on the left, we see tobacco, $800 worth of healthcare costs per user per year in Canada. Alcohol here, the middle one, $165 worth of healthcare costs per user per year. You can barely see it here on the right, but cannabis, that little $20 figure? Yeah, that's right. $20 per user per year in healthcare costs for cannabis. So it's no surprise that the taxes on tobacco and alcohol don't make up the healthcare costs, because there are so many healthcare costs associated with alcohol and tobacco. Meanwhile, with cannabis, this other bar you're seeing is the $328 per user per year that Canada spends on keeping cannabis illegal. That's right. We're spending $328 a year to save 20 bucks.
Why have another mood-altering drug made legal and then more widely available because of its legality?
Well, would you want to criminalize?
More widely available. Well, let's take a look at some more graphs here. Here's some graphs about teenagers in the 8th grade, the 10th grade, and the 12th grade, when surveyed on how easy it is for them to get a hold of marijuana. 37% of 8th graders, 69% of 10th graders, and a full 83.9% of 12th graders say it is easy or fairly easy to get marijuana. And when we take a look at the use rates from different countries, in the United States, 41.8% of all adult Americans have tried marijuana. In the Netherlands, where marijuana is somewhat tolerated, it's only 19%. Here's another look at how available marijuana is. They talk about, you know, whether or not we're going to allow another drug. Well, folks, guess what? Marijuana's already here. In this chart, you can see from the ages of 18 to 25, 28% of the population uses marijuana at least once per year, with 11% of them using at least twice per week. At the ages 26 to 34, it's almost 14%. 35 to 49, 8%. And people 50 and over, the fastest growing segment of people that are using marijuana, a full 3% of them are already using marijuana. When we look at the overall use of marijuana, how many people have actually ever tried marijuana? In 1987, it was 50 million people. Last year, it was 102 million total marijuana users. Now, of course, the population has gone up, but as a percentage, the percentage of people who have used marijuana has gone from 28% to 41%. So the only question now is not whether or not we're going to allow something, because it's already happening. The question is the state going to control it, or are criminals going to control it?
Legalize alcoholic use?
No, I'm not going back down that path, but I don't think that we need another thing that causes so much hurt to families and people.
Is this a waste of resources, though, to spend so much law enforcement, judicial effort, criminalizing people that want to go out and smoke pot?
No, we had 40,000 people die last year because of drug use. We can make that 80,000 or 120 or 360,000 by making it legal. You make it legal.
Wait a minute. We're talking about making marijuana legal. You want to talk about people who have died from drug use, the 20,000, the 80,000, 360,000. Of that number, zero would be people who had died from marijuana use. Marijuana is non-toxic. It cannot kill you.
You make it more accessible. You get permission for it. Alcohol is legal. We have plenty of alcoholics. We have plenty of people whose lives are wrecked, plenty of families whose lives are wrecked because of alcohol.
Because there's one argument.
You know, I'll testify to that. My father was an alcoholic, and my family was severely harmed by alcohol. So, Bill Bennett, why weren't you calling for prohibition of alcohol when you were a drug czar back in the 80s? Why isn't the harm that's demonstrated by alcohol proven? Everyone knows how much harm it can cause. Why isn't that an argument for prohibiting that?
Argument that alcohol is potentially a lot more dangerous than marijuana.
It may be. I think if you really examine the arguments, you might want to think about more restrictions on alcohol than opening up marijuana. When you see the effect of marijuana on the brain, particularly the young,
but you don't
brain,
want to go back to prohibition.
I don't want to go back to prohibition, but I certainly think the rules on drinking, if they were enforced, for example, on college campuses, where we know what this leads to from time to time, leads to a lot of things every weekend, but some weekends it leads to some of the horrible violence we've seen. But
Well, that is true. We do know on college campuses that binge drinking, alcohol leads to student deaths, to date rapes, to drunk driving, to assaults, to vandalism, and so on. But when you look at college campuses, I just recently did a story on Notre Dame's policies, but this, you know, Notre Dame's not unique by any stretch of the imagination. Look at the policies for underage alcohol abuse. Remember, below age 21, alcohol's an illegal drug for you, and the punishments for cannabis. Almost always on any college campus, if you're caught with marijuana, you're kicked out of the dorm, you lose your scholarships, these terrible, terrible punishments are exacted upon you, not to mention the Souder amendments that take away your student loans at the federal level. But when you look at underage punishment for alcohol, in the case of Notre Dame, it would take multiple repeated offenses of being intoxicated and causing problems before they might consider suspending the student. But if they catch him with cannabis, they will suspend the student. So yeah, there's one thing that Bill Bennett's pointing out there. So Bill, why don't we make cannabis legal so these college students who are so tempted to drink and do all of that stuff, why don't we give them the chance to use marijuana instead?
Let me just say a word about the war on drugs, properly understood, not to get into a war with Gil Kerlikowski about the phrase, but if you energize people, motivate people, if you talk about this issue, as Gil Kerlikowski has and will, I don't think the president has enough at all, and I think he should, you can have success. Remember, in 1979, there were about 24 million drug users in this country. This country decided to do something about it. There was a drug czar appointed. The country mobilized. The number in 1992 was 11 million. That's not victory, but from 24 million to 11 million is a big decline. It's now back up to 20 million.
So this is something that Bill Bennett was always really good at, and that's throwing numbers at you to try to confuse you and make you think that his point has any sort of sense to it. 24 million drug users in 1979, 11 million by 1992. It'd be just as relevant to say there were 24 million people wearing bell bottoms in 1979 and only 11 million by 1992. The correlation here is ridiculous because what he's doing is only picking the very peak of drug use in 79 and comparing it to the very lowest drug use measured in 1992. If we take a look at the war on drugs strategy, however, that's been enacted since 1970, the days of Richard Nixon, we had more drug users going on in 1970, and it increased to 24 million by 1979. So how come the drug war wasn't successful then, when it went up from 1970 to 79? Now, he's going to say the drug war was successful from 79 to 92, probably owing to the fact that he worked for Reagan and also Bush the Smarter. So he's going to point out those 12 years as being effective, but let's also point out that in those years, they were also introducing the crack cocaine dilemma in this country, and that's when our show usually ends. That's okay, we'll turn off the alarm. Go to sleep, you. Thank you. Too many gadgets. But they want to point out that during the Reagan years, it went down from 24 million to 11 million. But after Bush the Smarter left office, Clinton was in office using the same exact strategies of locking people up, and drug use went up in all characteristics. Let me go to the graphs here so you can just take a look at the actual numbers. This is a 20-year graph of cannabis use, the three different lines representing the annual, the monthly, and the lifetime use. So lifetime's at the top, and then annual, and then monthly's at the bottom. All of these graphs have trended upwards or stayed the same since 1988. So over the past two decades, marijuana use has either gone up or stayed the same depending on the frequency with which you measure. When we take a look at the other illegal drugs that they are typically focusing on, we look at cocaine, heroin, crack, hallucinogens, meth, and inhalants, you can see how this graph has also tended to trend upward over the past two decades. That's right, two decades of trending upwards in both of these graphs. So while Bill Bennett wants to make you think that the drug war strategy worked, he's only picking the point in the graph where drug use went down and saying that's where it was successful, and not pointing out that they've used the same strategies for 40 years of the drug war, and we still have just about or more the same number of drug users.
And I think if you press right on this thing, don't fall for the siren song of legalization. And I applaud the drug czar on that, and going out to California and fighting this issue. You can get those numbers back down. And that's what you want. You want the numbers down, not up.
Let me pick up with.
Okay, let's say that we do want to see the numbers of drug users going down. Certainly for hard drugs, I'd appreciate that. For cannabis, I don't care whether it stays the same, goes down, or goes up, since cannabis is non-toxic to its users and pretty much harmless to society. But let's actually take a look at government policies that have caused drug use to gone down. This is the graph of alcohol cigarette use in America. Red lines for alcohol use, purple lines for cigarette use. All of these lines have gone downwards. The tobacco lines have gone downwards because of a public service campaign against tobacco, the lawsuits against the tobacco companies that helped to fund things like truth.org, getting out the actual scientific facts about tobacco. The red lines for alcohol use have gone down, partially because of the Mothers Against Drunk Driving campaigns and the public campaigns for increased safety, but also just because people are realizing that drinking has harmful side effects if you engage in it too much. Notice both of these are the legal drugs, and nobody had to be arrested or have their lives ruined and their property taken away from them in order to get those numbers to go down.
One point that Bill just made, in your mind, and you're an authority on this, is alcohol potentially more dangerous than pot?
Two points. One, alcohol does cause more problems than marijuana, but alcohol is legal. If you make marijuana legal...
Minute. Okay, so he's trying to tell us that alcohol is more harmful because it's legal, or it's harmful but it's legal so we don't have to pay attention to it. Again, if alcohol is harmful like you're saying it is, then why not ban it? Because apparently that's our policy. We ban things that are harmful. You're claiming marijuana is so harmful. If alcohol is harmful, then why aren't you banning it? No, the reason alcohol is more dangerous has nothing to do whether it's legal or illegal. If you drink a quart of whiskey, you will die whether that whiskey is legal or illegal. Alcohol is more dangerous dangerous because it is toxic, and it is because it is highly impairing, and because it is addictive.
It will therefore become much more widely available, and therefore the damages and detriment to society and to individuals would continue to increase. But let me mention also, President Obama is actively engaged in this. When I met with him and he gave me some directions to get the voice of the American people into this strategy, that's what's in there. When I briefed him a week ago about the strategy, he could not be more supportive.
Well, let's look at this strategy. First of all, how could marijuana be any more available than it is now? Like I said in the earlier slide, we've got 84% of our high school seniors saying it is easy or fairly easy to get marijuana. In report after report from government sources, teenagers say it is easier to get a hold of marijuana than it is to get a hold of alcohol. We find that 69% of high school seniors say they could get marijuana within a day. 25% of them say they could get marijuana within an hour. So how much more available is it going to be when we start checking IDs like we do for alcohol and tobacco, which kids say are harder to get a hold of? And furthermore, about this strategy and more countries going on, I'd encourage everyone to check out normal.org, and there's a paper that Paul Armentano has written called The Real World Ramifications of Cannabis Legalization and Decriminalization. This actually takes a look at the countries and the states that have reduced penalties, decriminalized, or somewhat tolerated or legalized, like they have in the Netherlands, the use of cannabis. And the facts are in and shows no major increase in use and a lot of decrease in the harms that we associate with marijuana, the crimes and so on.
We reduce the demand for illegal drugs in the United States.
Smart education through a variety of trusted givers.
Nancy Reagan used to say, just say no.
She did. And you know, it's a little more complex than that. If parents, teachers, faith community, and neighborhood groups all give young people the same consistent message and they repeat it about making healthy choices, underage drinking is mentioned in the strategy, the drug problems, and of course if they get healthy choice advice about exercise, nutrition, they will actually be prevented in the future.
This for decades.
Okay, all of those things are good. We want kids to get more education about harmful drugs, alcohol, nicotine, smoking, healthy lifestyle choices, exercise, nutrition, and so on. But like we pointed out at the beginning, the Drug Czar is required by law to lie about marijuana. So the education that he can give about marijuana, if he was to give factual information about its health benefits, how it can be used for all of the uses that hemp would provide, all the medical benefits we can get for it. If he were to, the nutrition of hemp seed, my God, if he was to point out all of that, it would be obvious to our school children that the keeping it illegal is not any sort of consistent strategy from our government.
Okay, sir.
Well, we've only kept it to 4 hours in a healthcare class about drugs and maybe 4 hours about nicotine. It has to be across the whole continuum.
I remember when I was a little boy growing up in Buffalo, New York, I heard all those stories, the horrors of drugs, and we were taught that, and I assume since then all the kids are taught about
it. One, we don't want to use scare tactics, and number two, we want to use the evidence-based systems, and that's what the most recent analysis tells us. Across the board.
Well, we would love to see some evidence-based education when it comes to drugs. That would be really nice, especially with regard to marijuana. But don't be fooled by the Drug Czar's rhetoric here. They keep talking about how they want to have a balanced approach. They want to put more toward prevention, more toward treatment. We've got to treat it holistically. You're going to hear a lot of that. But this graph will just show you. It's not really a graph. It's more of a chart here. This is the Obama balanced approach to drug war funding when you actually take a look at the numbers in the budget. Treatment and prevention get $5.6 billion in the Obama drug war budget. Law enforcement and interdiction get $9.9 billion. It's a nearly 2-to-1 ratio, just like it was during the W. Bush administration, just like it was during the Clinton administration. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Board quality advisors giving kids the right piece of information.
Is this going to make a dent?
It does. If you do it, I agree again across the board. And Nancy Reagan's statements were underrated. A lot of the kids liked those statements. They liked because it was clear. Just say no. It's a heck of a lot better statement than if it feels good, do it. It's a lot.
Okay, wait a minute. Who was putting out "If it feels good, do it"? Are you trying to throw that on us at Normal or any of the drug law reform organizations? No. Look, the Nancy Reagan "Just Say No" era, those messages have been studied. The fried egg, you know, this is your brain on drugs, the running over the girl at the drive-through, the shooting your friend with the pistol.
The cartoon all-stars.
It's all been debunked, and it has been found that the government spent money, billions of dollars, on these programs, and not only did they not dissuade kids from using drugs, in some cases, it enticed them into using drugs. Those ads were a failure, and Bill Bennett is calling for more of the same.
It's a lot clearer. You want that statement, but you also want sound education programs and sound policies in the schools. Problem is, kids get a message of ambiguity from adults. And when you have this legalization stupidity out there, you're going to have more young people confused.
Okay, let me address this legalization stupidity. This is a chart showing you the support for marijuana legalization in poll after poll. The green line indicates the rising support of people that say we should legalize marijuana. The red line shows the declining support for keeping it prohibited like it is now. So if you're talking about legalization stupidity, you're talking about 43% of the American people that are stupid. Also, I'd kind of like to point out the drug war budgets here. You know, Bill Bennett's got 50, or the drug czar and the entire federal government have $15.5 billion to spend on the drug war. By comparison, those of us who are doing drug law reform, I've got the graph up now. This red line indicates the billions of dollars that the $15.5 billion that the federal government has to spread their message about the drug war. Meanwhile, we have maybe combined from all drug war, drug reform policy organizations, Normal, MPP, DPA, SAFER, SSDP, ASA, and so on, we might have $1 million between us. So for some reason, our message with only $1 million worth of funding has caused 43% of the American people to buy into this so-called legalization stupidity, while $15.5 billion spent by the federal government has shown nothing but increasing rates of drug use, have shown the increasing purity of hard drugs, a decrease in the price of hard drugs, and 23,000 Mexicans slaughtered south of our border to maintain this prohibition on marijuana.
You're not hearing enough directly from the president on this issue. Is there any basic problem you have with the Obama administration's efforts to deal with this issue?
Not really. Again, I'd like more attention, more publicity. There are a lot of things going on. We understand what competes for attention. But this strategy, if people read it, I think would be very impressive. It's a clear moral message, and it talks about working on a variety of fronts. I think it's quite good. But what you had back in the 80s was...
Let's go back to this more about that he expects more from President Obama on this war against drugs. This might be kind of tough when President Obama said this.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
That was the point. So we're not talking about a guy that, you know, just puffed once, experimented with it. This is a guy who had some real experience with using marijuana. He's also quoted as saying that he wanted us to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws. So maybe President Obama's not the best guy to put on the bully pulpit for Just Say No.
Was an entire society mobilized, and this is what leadership does. You did have all those ads, the guy jumping off the diving board into an empty swimming pool. This is your brain on drugs. This is the two fried eggs. Because the society decided it wanted to push back.
Public service.
It pushed back,
see more
it went
of those
down, and we can do that again.
No, again, like I pointed out, those ads were shown to be failures in keeping kids off drugs. But let's also remember what was going on in the 80s with the CIA and the Contras and funneling cocaine into America, the crack cocaine epidemic, when every newscaster was coming on the air and the president was coming on the air saying, this is the big new drug. It's called crack. It will get you really, really, really high. It's super addictive. It's really cheap. So don't use it. Whatever you do, don't use the crack. It's really really, really, really powerful. Don't use it. Basically, an advertising campaign for crack cocaine that caused us to have so much problems in the cities and problems with crack addiction that all drugs got demonized as a matter of course. They said, oh, marijuana would lead to crack. Look how bad crack is. That's been shown to be false as well. We find that for every 108 people who ever use marijuana, only one goes on to use any other sort of hard drug.
They're coming up. The president asked for $66 million in those advertisements, and those advertisements are directed towards specific groups. In fact, just last week we released the strategies for meth on reservations in tribal nations for those kids. Those are targeted directly to that youth group, and we're going to continue to do those things.
Well, that's a wonderful program. Absolutely. Let's target meth abuse on Native American reservations. But remember, Gil, every single dollar you spend fighting against marijuana, fighting against legalization, trying to prevent people from using cannabis in their own personal, private lives, every dollar you spend on pot is a dollar you're not spending to help Native American youth to get off meth. It's a dollar you're not spending to help people in the cities get off crack cocaine. It's a dollar that you're not spending to help junkies in the inner city with some sort of heroin treatment. It's a dollar that you're not spending on people getting alcohol treatment. It's a bed in a treatment facility that's filled with a marijuana offender who had to choose between jail or rehab, a bed that could better be served for somebody with a serious drug addiction rather than someone who's only doing time there to stay out of incarceration. You are wasting our money every year. You are wasting lives every year. The prohibition of marijuana hurts people even that don't smoke marijuana. It's time to end this. The American people are on our side, and we are going to continue with legalization. Drug czars be damned.
Joe Karolkowski, thanks very much for coming in. Bill Bennett, thanks for this discussion. Let's hope you make a dent. We're counting on you.
Good.
Oh, there we go. That's from the Situation Room, CNN's Wolf Blitzer, and Drug Czar Kurlikowski and Drug Czar Bill Bennett, the first Drug Czar. Thanks for checking that out. You can catch it at moxnews.com. And we've gone long here at Normal Show Live, but that's cool because once I get rolling, I got to keep rolling. For everybody here at Normal Show Live, for Ganja John and Cannabis Carry, thanks for tuning in. And we want to thank everybody who is a fan of the show. Please tell your friends. Tell them about live.normal.org every week. Weekday, Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Pacific, with replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9. Follow me on Twitter, at Radical Russ, for all the latest updates. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.